The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. The Champions League game week 5 lasts 29 minutes for Eric Dier before Jose humbly drags him off as Spurs make it to the last 16 with a comeback over Olympiacos. Elsewhere, it's draws all round for the English sides. Liverpool and City held at home. Great fun in Spain as Chelsea and Valencia draw 2-2. PSG stage a late comeback at the Bernabeu and Lukaku shines for Inter. In the Football League, West Brom stay top of the Championship while Gary Monk gives the press conference of the season. We'll look ahead to the weekend's Premier League games, work out how you plug Amazon into your telly, and whether you should leave John Terry out of your team of the decade just to see how upset he gets on Instagram. We'll do all that, answer your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. On the panel today, Lars Sivertsen.
Hi, Max.
Bringing the Irish.
Well, yes.
Nice to see you.
I'm not in a great place because I think I definitely frightened a lady in the Guardian reception on my way in.
Okay, in what sense?
I was waiting for them to get my pass sorted, mm-hmm. and I was sort of in my own world, and I didn't notice that they'd been calling my name over to the desk for quite some time. And I went like, and just as I went there was a lady who was passing me by quite quickly, and she had a significant fright.
Oh, okay.
Because people don't expect random Norwegians to shout at you in the Guardian reception.
When did you last scare someone? John Bruin?
I can't think when.
No. You don't, I mean, you don't strike me as a terror.
Okay, I'll go with that, yeah.
Football hipsters, Sam Diss.
Come on. Hello. Thanks for having me back.
You're wearing socks? Monday Owl magazine. You are, yeah, you've got socks on.
I've actually got socks, yeah.
What's happened to you? Have you grown up?
I think I'm just getting older now, and now when my ankles get cold, the rest of my body hurts.
Sure. So. You've realised they're a useful...
Yeah, it turns out you need them.
Yeah. Excellent. How's Monday Owl going?
Yeah, going great. Excellent. New issue out in a couple of weeks, and it's all going fine.
We'll get into that in a bit. Let's start then at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Spurs 4, Olympiacos 2, 2-0 down, and Mourinho takes off Eric Dier after 29 minutes. Jose did apologise to Eric. John, it's brutal, and it is so rare seeing someone taken off in the first half, and quite early in the first half, but was this tactical genius? From Jose?
It's something of a Jose Mourinho special move, though, isn't it? That it's a dramatic gesture. It shows the rest of the team that he is watching and he will not accept that. It's very rare that players get... I mean, previous weekend, Phil Jones got subbed off at half-time when perhaps he could have been done with subbed off after 20-odd minutes. Mourinho's done it before. He did it previously to Nemanja Matic when he was at Chelsea. Now, oddly enough, that was a player that he had faith in because he bought him later for Manchester United. And Eric Dier is one of those players that I think he rates and sees him as part of his team. And I think maybe it was a little bit of test of character. If you think about the way certain managers talk about how they turn their team around is that they... confront the strongest members of the team rather than the weakest members of the team. So I think that there's a tactical reason behind that, but I think he thought that Dier was someone that could cope with that, and he apologised to him. I suppose the question is, if he did that later in the Mourinho cycle, when it all starts falling apart, what it looks like at this point, he's still in the PR bit and, listen, Eric, I've got your best interests at heart. He's actually picking him for the team rather than Pochettino. Mm-hmm. So, and... ultimately, it delivered results, and he can point to that.
With Mourinho, it's always tempting to reduce everything to, you know, mind games and motivational tactics and all this sort of thing. But it was notable, I thought, that he made a big point out of, like, giving him a hug when he came off, and he made a big point out of apologising to him in the press, however disingenuous his general demeanour in the press has been. And just tactically, like, you go 2-0 down early at home in the Champions League to a team like Olympiacos, you know you're going to be chasing the game for the rest of the game. It makes perfect sense to take off the midfielder who gives you the least in possession. Yeah. So I thought it was a very logical football decision, while there might be an element of all the other mental aspects as well.
Yeah, I think there's probably still an air of Dier getting back up to full fitness as well. I mean, he's had about a year. I know he's had some health problems and stuff like that. And so if you're going to hook anyone, he's the person to go, as Lars says. And I don't really think it was that notable a move, really. Like, it just seems like something that managers just do. I know that he has a bit of
No, but isn't that the thing? They don't do it. They probably should do it more.
I know what you mean, but like it does happen. Like it's not like he was just like, oh well, I'm just gonna do something mad. He, like I said, it was very much sort of like it was 1 + 1 = 2. It was just like it was quite logical what he's done.
I've seen him. It was a game for Chelsea against Tottenham, and I'm fairly sure that he took 3 off at once. It might have been at half time or something like that, or it might have been after 30 minutes. But he just. It's a Mourinho trait.
Mm. Yeah. But is it a Mourinho trait? Is it, in a sense, you should credit him to say he realised he'd got it wrong?
Yes.
Yeah. And he changed it quickly, because I think a lot of managers wouldn't have done that.
It's not necessarily just about getting it wrong either. It's about the fact that the game state has changed, right? The rest of the game is about keeping possession and attacking Olympiacos and pushing for the goals that you now need, which you didn't know that you were going to need in quite the same way, right? Mm. So it's completely changed the dynamic of the situation. And again, I thought it was a very, very logical footballing move to make. And actually, I think for the Spurs fans, you know, there's a lot has been said and written about Poch out and Moo in. It's not much to add to that, except I think there's a sense of relief for Tottenham fans to have a guy in the dugout who at least is very good at changing the flow of a game and making impactful substitutions. Yeah. So yeah, because for all that's good about Pochettino, that's never really been his strength.
I think that's a good point, because I think Pochettino's not weakness, because obviously they've been under constraints financially or whatever else. He hasn't really changed that team in a long time, and I think he spent so much time making it gel that then when it started to fall apart, he was just like, but the team unit. Whereas like you've got someone who comes in who is the biggest personality going and likes to impose himself on games. I think he's almost, like, as much as it is a logical decision, I think that there is also the case of him just imposing himself as sort of like being the anti to what Pochettino does.
They're such very different managers, because when I think of a Pochettino classic game, you're thinking of games where Tottenham won flying by the seat of their pants, the wins against City and Ajax last season, the defeat of Chelsea when they won 5-3 on New Year's Day 2015, I think that was. And the classic Mourinho game is a 0-0 at Anfield. Mm-hmm. You know, and so you've got this manager that's completely different to what you've had before, which is often the case, is the way that clubs make those decisions. And so therefore, he's had two games which essentially are gimmies. Now, with the greatest respect, Sam, West Ham. And then Olympiacos.
There's more respect than was warranted, I think.
Yes.
That's quite fair, mate.
Yes. That's the most respect West Ham have had for time.
Yeah. And so I'm not sure what we can learn from those two games, because they're playing against inferior opponents.
You know, it did all change then. But Spurs were incredibly lucky still. Like the Yassir Mariah's mistake for Dele Alli's first goal, where it's an amazing air kick. You know, he clenches his fist to the sky like, damn the gods of football. It was amazing. And then Kane's second, and I don't, you know, the ball boy was, you know, instrumental. But Olympiacos really should have had a free kick. I felt Olympiacos should have had a free kick there. So, and then I can't have been the only person who screamed, take a touch to Serge Aurier before so a lot of things went for Jose there, or went for Spurs.
But the Aurier thing is something he deserves credit for, because it's a sort of a clever tactical scheme that he's come up with of just letting Aurier attack like a wild and crazy horse down the right wing, and whilst having the left back sort of stay at home so it doesn't become, you know, calamitous at the back. And that has worked so far. It has, you know, relieving Aurier of some defensive responsibility is probably not a bad thing, and he is quite dangerous going forwards. You're right. You can call it a break. It's also a hint of good management there, isn't
it? Yeah, I think that if you do a positive move like he has so early on, I think you do have that. If you're talking to the football gods there, I think that it does just sort of like, you do get a bit of like the players just kind of go, all right, well, we're doing something positive, we're doing that move, and you get those things that just sort of like the ball sort of like dropping for you a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, Dele looked sharp again, didn't he? And Spurs are perfecting that substitute someone on the other side of the pitch, so they have to walk around the whole thing and high five. Heung-min Son's done it as well. It's sort of clever to do it when you're winning. If you're in a good moment, then you get this sort of extra sort of fillip for the fans.
Well, yeah, but then if you'd have done that with Dyer when you were 2-0 down in the first half, it's not the most sort of uplifting walk around.
If you're going to sub someone after 25 minutes, make sure they're near the dugout so they can get off pretty sharp.
The thing that really strikes me looking at the Spurs lineup and also just looking ahead a little bit in the future, if you go through the team, when Ben Davies is back, if he's back at left back, which makes sense if you're going to continue doing this lopsided thing, because he's played at centre half before, maybe Ndombele comes in for Harry Winks, even though he's been good so far, maybe Lamela comes in for Moura at some point, because you can see Mourinho and Lamela getting on. You then have an 11 where Serge Aurier is the only player who's shorter than 180 centimetres.
Yeah, that's classic.
You have a lot of big, Mourinho, strong that. Men yeah. there, and it just seems to me that Tottenham have completely unintentionally and by accident assembled a pretty Mourinho squad there.
How tall is Heung-min Son?
He's quite tall.
Yeah, he's 6'1".
He's more lanky. Like,
is he 6'1"?
He's 6 foot, I think. Yeah.
Wow.
It's one of those things where people call him the little Korean, and he isn't little at all.
No. Very dumb people, presumably.
Yeah. Well, that's me. Spurs qualify from Group B. Bayern are also through. They won 6-0 at Red Star Belgrade, 4 for Lewandowski. Goretzka's first ever Champions League goal, 1 for Tolisso. At least Red Star know that Bayern scored more at White Hart Lane than they did it in their ground.
Lewandowski, I saw somebody write about it for ESPN, and they had the top 10 strikers in the world, forwards in the world. Lewandowski wasn't in it.
Really?
Yeah, that's...
Well, is this because he's got this reputation, a sort of flat-track bully reputation, which I don't know if
which
it's...
Which is completely undeserved.
But what kind of piece was this? Because was this one of those jury things? Because I do wonder, maybe he's one that people don't feel that strongly about, so you don't have him...
His form at the moment is... I mean, he hadn't scored at the weekend, so he scores 4 in midweek.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a guy...
That was the first game he hadn't scored in
the Bundesliga
in the league,
all season, yeah. I mean, the guy's a phenomenon.
What's it, 51 in 53, I think it was, to start?
Which is like Gerd Müller type of thing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like if that doesn't get you into the top 10, I don't know really what does, apart from being slightly faster on FIFA, which tends to have, like, a real boost to every single ranking I've ever seen.
Now, this season has been particularly wild. He's got 16 goals and 12 in the Bundesliga and 10 and 5 in the Champions League.
Yeah, he scored the same number of goals.
Which is sort of Braut Haaland numbers, except, of course, he's playing in Austria. So
he scored the same number of goals as Manchester United. This season. Thank you to producer Jonathan for that stat. If Red Star avoid defeat to Olympiacos, they'll go into the Europa League. Group H, Valencia 2, Chelsea 2. Brilliant fun, Lars.
Unhinged.
Wasn't it? Yeah, it was, afterwards Frank Lampard was saying it could have been 6-6, and they're the sort of games that managers hate, which is a nice
He must be getting
cliche.
Used to that now, though.
Yeah,
because
they
play
quite
like
an open type of football, Chelsea. That's going to happen quite a lot to them, I think, the way they go about things. But, you know, more fun for the fans, I guess.
Yeah.
Or for neutrals in particular.
They could have qualified with a win, and they almost did.
Sam, very quickly, do you feel about Maxi Gomez almost suffering some of the West Ham striker's curse, in fact, of never having actually gone to West Ham? I mean, he scored some goals.
You get it just rubbing off on them,
yeah,
don't they? If they get mentioned in the same sentence.
Yeah, he has scored some goals in La Liga, that is true, but some of the misses here were howlers.
They weren't good.
And there's the kind of things you associate from players who are actually signed for West Ham, not just linked.
This feels unfair. Well, this is not a West Ham segment.
I don't know if there even is a West Ham segment today.
I genuinely hope there isn't a West Ham segment.
Maxi Gomez, it was 0-0, and he put one wide, and the ball wasn't even coming across at pace, because Rodrigo missed one in the last minute at 2-2, which was also, he went with his wrong foot and shinned it wide.
Yeah, Bolton legend.
But that was a slightly harder chance.
It was.
In the last minute. Yeah. The first miss was extraordinary, and then he had another one that Kepa actually saved really well, I thought.
It was just one of those games where it annoys me that Chelsea are now fun to watch as a West Ham fan. But like as a neutral watching them, they are good. But like you do have to wonder how long they can sustain this. Whether it becomes one of those things where after Christmas everyone is just completely knackered, and also the players are a bit like, this is just unsustainable. Like this isn't a way of playing that's going to actually get us anywhere. Because at the minute Lampard's just kind of gone, well, this is fun. But like they've got
sort of like an Ozzy Ardiles style.
A little bit, but like they're still playing Kante wider, and which is still kind of baffling to me, especially in bigger games, because like surely you'd have him at the base. Surely, and like he's just so clearly. I mean, this isn't news to anyone. Like I don't understand. Anyone who's seen him play in the last like year and a half have gone, oh well, Kante should be playing in there, and they're still just going, you know what?
To be fair, I think Kante is quite good, sort of marauding forward. Occasionally, his final pass is not magnificent, but. There was a run that he made, I think, before even the goal started going in, that was just, you know, hit the pace that he can build up, that sort of middle distance runner from one end of the pitch to the other. I think Chelsea, I was thinking about this the other day, like, which team do they remind me of? And it is David O'Leary's babies of 20 years ago.
Okay.
A group of players who actually ended up not really making it, which I'm not sure I could predict that for these players, but there is a risk of playing so many of those players together at one time. Mm. And if they all, say Frank Lampard's team has a slump, then they're all affected by that. Obviously, they aren't going to suffer the same problems that those players had being at Leeds, who suddenly had to sell everybody because the financials weren't right. Well, unless Roman Abramovich walks away. But this is they're so exciting to watch as that Leeds team was. And I don't think there are not many more exciting things in football than watching a team of young players just going at it without playing without fear, is the thing I'd say.
I enjoyed seeing Kovacic score a goal because he's one of those. I watched him play when he was very young. Played for Dinamo Zagreb versus Hoja Helsinki in 2012, and he came on, and he will have been 16 or 17 then. And he was one of those that you don't have to be a football genius to see immediately that he had something and was going to go very far. But the thing is, back then, the thing you noticed was extraordinarily good technical and just great at going past people, like ghosting past people with the ball and stuff. And I imagined he was going to be a sort of top European number 10. Mm. And he's kind of become a slightly different player. Mm, and while obviously he's made it at the top level, it's funny when you watch a player when they're very young. You do tend to look out for them then, later on.
And I've been in a sort of paternal way.
Almost, yeah, which is pathetic.
The father of Kovacic.
Pathetic and weird, but there is something to it.
No, I don't disagree with that.
And it's been slightly disappointing that he's become this sort of very competent but slightly anemic central midfielder uninspiring.
Ticking over kind of player.
Yeah, but we're seeing a bit more of him this season, a little bit less constrained by tactics this season maybe. And
The thing is with him, last season he was so interchangeable with Ross Barkley.
It's not a good thing to be.
And Ross Barkley has blotted his copybook.
Oh yes, he went to a nightclub, didn't he? He was topless in a nightclub.
Topless, which isn't the first time that's happened.
Really?
He gets hot.
And Frank Lampard's, he stopped short of issuing the riot act, but it clearly wasn't happy.
No, but I imagine Frank may have been topless in a nightclub at some point in his life, or certainly in a nightclub. To the action itself, I mean, Kepa got criticised for the equaliser from Daniel Vaz, which was, you know, an overhit cross. I think we all think that, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, but they do happen. I don't think it's always the keeper's fault.
I agree with you completely.
I think it's just come off the wrong part of his toe. He's like not expecting that. You can't. They're not superhuman to be able to just second guess all of these things all at once.
And I think the criticism comes because he didn't put his hands up, but he wouldn't have got the ball if he'd put his hands up. No. So he just sort of decided, well, for the cameras, I think he would have fooled Martin Keown, who was on CoComs, if he'd put his hands up.
Yeah. Well, Martin Keown was hugely critical, and I didn't really see the problem with it because he couldn't save it. It's unsavable.
I agree with that. I mean, he made a brilliant save from that penalty because it was struck so hard.
Yeah.
And Kepa doesn't look like he's got strong wrists. He's quite a spindly chap.
He looks a bit like he's just like a large 11-year-old.
Yeah.
But like he's a really good goalkeeper. And I think that there were some question marks about him. I remember, especially after his little run-in with Sarri at the end of last season as well, people were just kind of like, is his attitude a bit weird or whatever? But he's just a young, like really good goalkeeper.
And saving a penalty, you know, buries that Willy Caballero ghost as well, doesn't it?
Really it really does. Although, you know, every time there's a penalty against Chelsea, I just really want them to bring Caballero
the designated
on.
Saver.
Yeah. Just tiny bit of VAR, but how is that a penalty? I mean, it's definitely a foul on Jorginho, not a foul by Jorginho.
Yeah, I agree. Weird.
And, okay, well, that's good. That's good. No.
It's, I don't know. The defender is clever. He comes from behind. He sticks his foot in there. I don't think it's a penalty myself. No.
Tammy Abraham went off injured. It looked bad. By all accounts, it's not as bad as we originally thought. How do you think Lampard's first Champions League group stage has gone so far, John? I mean, we talk about the group stages not really meaning anything to big teams, but you know, Chelsea are involved in a proper scrap here, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's testing them. When those groups were drawn, it was 2 from 3, and that's the position they're in at the moment. And I suppose it's a bit of a Mick McCarthy situation, you know. You put it, given him that position in game 6, he'd have bitten your hand off.
He would have done, yeah. In the other game, Ajax beat Lille 2-0. The Hakim Ziyech show, and he is such a brilliant player. And he scored the first from the edge of the box in the second minute, put a cross perfectly onto Quincy Promise's toe for the second. Lille did miss two huge chances at 1-0.
They were they were bad chances to miss. They were up there with the possibly not quite as simple as the Valencia ones that were missed, but they were not good.
But they really missed them. I mean,
they really, yeah, they did their best.
Absolutely hammered them over the bar.
Very high.
So Chelsea still have their fate in their own hands. A win against Lille, who are bottom of the group with just 1 point, will see them through. And that'll do for part one. Part two will begin at Anfield. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Firstly, thank you to everyone who came to the O2. It was a blistering success. And we've got some more live shows that will also be successful.
Also blistering?
I did write it was a blistering success before the show happened. But I'm sticking with it. Yeah. I'll give Ellis James man of the match, but it was a great performances all round. December the 20th. Lars,
yes,
we're going to Leeds.
We are.
With Jonathan Wilson and one more.
It's my first time in Leeds. I'm excited.
Excellent news. It's the Friday before Christmas. So it'll be a quiet one.
Yeah, I imagine. Absolutely. No, no one out in Leeds.
No, there won't be. We've sold out the 27th of January in Dublin, but the 28th there are still tickets. We're almost sold out. Eamon says, how highly do you rate Johnny Lou's excuse to get out of the Dublin live show? It's my wife's Finnish granny's 90th birthday. I believe Johnny Lou.
I absolutely approve of having relations in Finland, but I'd say, why would you want to get out of the Dublin live shows? They're so much fun.
Exactly right.
Enormous fun.
Also fun in the pub afterwards, aren't they, Lars?
No comment whatsoever.
If you ever see Lars,
no.
Ask him what happened in the pub. Ask him what great, generous offer he was
They're
given.
Just really friendly people in Dublin.
That was tremendous. Before that, brand new announcements, Claxon. First ever Football Weekly live in Brighton at the Salis Benny Theatre on the 20th of January. Me, Barry, Nicky Bandini, Ellis James. It is a Monday night and it is the day after Liverpool versus Manchester United. Details on the website page and on Twitter, etc., etc. Group E, Liverpool 1, Napoli 1. A lot. Sam's being made of Jurgen Klopp's team selection. He rested Trent Alexander-Arnold, had a midfield three of Henderson, Milner and Fabinho, who went off injured. I mean, Liverpool do have this utterly ludicrous fixture list in December, so he has to rotate. But did he get it wrong? If you're not playing Trent, do you have to have a more creative midfield?
Yeah, yes and no. I don't know, it was a weird one because they still tried to play like they had Trent rather than just sort of changing it a little bit and playing a bit like further through midfield. I think the selection was that bad because you're right, that a fixture pile up like that, you just need to do what you've got to do to keep things ticking over. I think that they also knew exactly what they were going to get from Napoli. They knew it was going to be hard. I think he probably would have taken that draw, really. How hard they've made it from like four times in the past 2 years.
Yeah.
I think that obviously the bigger loss was Fabinho coming off really early. That sort of shook everything up, as good as Wijnaldum played when he came on, which Klopp said as well, he said, I had a very, very good game. It's just, I feel sorry for Joe Gomez, who's clearly doing a job, but he's being asked to do the job of one of the best right backs in the league, probably in the world. You can't really just step in and do that. Do you know what I mean? I feel like it was a bit of an unfair task for him, and I think he's going to get some criticism. He got some criticism in the pub last night. There's a lot of people being like, why is he playing? He's not good enough and stuff like that. And you're just a bit like, well, it's not.
He's also a centre-back, right?
He's also a centre-back being asked to play like Trent Arnold, which is like, there aren't many right-backs that can play like that.
Yeah. The difficulty being, I guess, John, is had they won last night, then they could have had a game off, right? They could have taken anybody to Salzburg.
Whereas now, if they're pummeled by the mighty Alan Bart Haaland, then they could actually go out.
Yeah. So,
yeah, and then you go to the Thursday, Sunday nightmare, which is another fixture nightmare. But
absolutely, don't think it'll happen though.
Neither do I. But I was hearing on the radio last night Darren Fletcher talking about how if you're in a team which has, essentially success breeds having so many games, and how managers go through that. And obviously, he worked for Alex Ferguson, and the way that a manager works through his squad and will say, Ferguson would say, you play in this game, we're keeping you back for that game. The problem is with that is I suspect that Ferguson probably had a slightly bigger squad than that which Klopp counts upon.
Mm. But it's interesting because Klopp, he doesn't change that top three, and he does have, Shaqiri has barely played. He could do a job up there.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Gomez doesn't play that often either, which is, possibly part of the reason why he looked a little bit rusty. I think Fabinho we await news of that. I mean, there was a bit of a wobble, wasn't there, when Van Dijk pulled up during one.
It was the goal, wasn't it?
Yes.
Which I think really he's gone for the free kick there to get the free kick, because there was a little bit of a nudge in him. He's just sort of like just gone right over, because there wasn't that much contact.
No.
He didn't seem to twist anything or come down particularly awkward. I think it's probably like a little bit of just sort of like, oh, I've not got the free kick there. I'm going to stay down.
But it was a total panic.
Oh yeah,
amongst Liverpool fans was not Van Dijk.
Yeah.
After it having lost Fabinho as well.
Interestingly, that goal they conceded is, you know, Liverpool are obviously the best team in the country right now, and one of the best teams in Europe. So finding their Achilles heel is, you're not saying they're bad, but they have this issue that they concede goals that seem like just sort of quite hopeful punts up, you know, over the top. And, you know, it was a wonderful finish from Mertens, but he had a lot of time.
That was a very Dries Mertens goal, though, because he had time to sort of take a touch and move in and get himself a better angle, but he sort of smashed it in on the volley anyway. Very good for a neat finish in a tight situation, Dries Mertens is. I guess it's just a consequence of the fact that they push up the pitch a lot. I mean, you're going to get caught in behind sometimes, and it happens. It's not something I worry a lot about.
Their fixture list is brutal. When you actually read the teams they're playing, you sort of... It's probably easy to go, actually, they should probably win all of these. But Brighton at home Saturday, then Wednesday Everton at home, then Saturday Bournemouth away, then Tuesday Salzburg away, Saturday Watford, then Tuesday Villa, then the next day the Club World Cup in Qatar, then the 21st in Qatar, back for Boxing Day, Leicester, then Wolves, then Sheffield United on the 2nd.
And then they've got Tottenham and Manchester United after that.
Mm. They're playing a lot of very energetic teams as well. So even though they should beat them, they're going to get run. Mm. And I know that Leicester are probably the closest to how they play in terms of the press and how much they are scaring teams, probably more so than Man City right now, where people can sort of like go, I kind of know how to nullify this a little bit as much as you can. Mm. But I think that there's a lot of it just comes down to just what happens if you're a good team. Do you know what I mean? You play those games, like Fletcher was saying.
I mean, and this has been the problem with Klopp teams going back to Dortmund, is that they eventually get tired because of the style of play.
Yeah.
And that might be... I mean, I think Liverpool will win the league this season. I mean, but you do wonder how long it's sustainable with that group of players now. Unlike Maurizio Pochettino, he probably does have the apparatus to turn over the team.
Mm.
Though, but that's never always guaranteed. But
look, Van Dijk has played every minute of every game. Robertson, Firmino, Wijnaldum have played in every game. Fabinho, Alexander Arnold, Mane have played in all but one. You have to play your best players, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Arsene Wenger used to call it the red zone, and there's a lot of those players that are in that, and yet they're going to play 10 games in a month. That's very dangerous for a club that, you know, has Manchester City on at the tail.
They've also got not a lot of breathing room, but they've got a little bit where they can get to a point where they might just be sort of like trying to build up a bit of a lead, and then after Christmas sort of like just pump the brakes just ever so slightly. But I do agree, if ever there is a criticism of a Klopp team, it's just they're just going to run the arse off them for the best part of 6-7 months and then
hope to hang on. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that in the last couple of years at Liverpool, he has moderated himself a bit. No, I mean, the heavy metal has been...
The volume has
been switched a bit down.
They're
slightly better in possession than his Dortmund teams were, for instance.
Yeah, of course, but they used to have that slump in the first two or three seasons. The slump would come January, February, because obviously he'd ratcheted it up to 11. And yeah, they if you remember last season, at the start of the season, Liverpool fans were taken aback by how reserved they were compared to...
Yeah, they were definitely making...
Yeah, and that's proved very successful.
So they're sort of... They're like Liz McColgan. You know, didn't she always go like two laps ahead in those incredibly boring, long athletics races?
Yeah.
In the 10,000 metres, and then people would slowly catch her up, as opposed to a sort of Steve Cram, where you're just on the edge of the back marker and then you take the lead. Anyone with me on those analogies?
A bit old for me, mate.
I remember.
Thank you, John. Thanks. I appreciate that. Fair play to Dejan Lovren. That is a brilliant header, by the way. Salzburg won 4-1 away at Genk. They scored 16 goals in the group stage. Only Bayern and Spurs have scored more. Erling Braut Haaland,
of course,
scored again,
obviously.
Lars. His numbers.
Unstoppable.
He didn't even start the game.
He didn't start the game.
Doesn't need to.
His numbers this season are ridiculous. 19 games, 27 goals, 7 assists, 5 hat-tricks. two mentions of him by Lars before we even got to this game. He came on after an hour at Genk, still managed to get a goal and an assist. He scored 8 goals in the Champions League, the same as Eden Hazard, who's played 44 games more. He's the first and only teenager to score in 5 Champions League games in a row. He's got an average of a goal or an assist every 33 minutes in the Champions League. Only Diego Costa and Alessandro Del Piero also scored in their first 5 Champions League games. Del Piero was 20, playing for Juve. Costa was 25, playing for Atletico. Haaland's 19, he's playing for Salzburg.
They might actually be good. Like, I think it's one of those things where, a bit like what you were saying about a flat track bully, I mean, his numbers in the league, you have to obviously take them with a pinch of salt, but what he's doing in the Champions League is just like, you can't really argue with that now. And he does look, I mean, when he came on, I mean, they used Dakar quite smartly to just sort of like run their defence ragged until they were a little bit tired, and then it was like, all right, we're going to bring on the one that is going to do everything else now. But yeah, I think that whole team is like, it's good. It's not a one-man team even. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, RB Salzburg, even though they're sort of new boys at this level, they are a team who've been set up to play at this level for many years. Yeah. And they kept finding new and more interesting ways of not qualifying for the group stage. But now that they finally got there, you can see the pedigree they have. And they've long supplied the Bundesliga in particular, but in Europe in general, with very good players. They're a very good finishing school for talent. Mm-hmm. And Brad Haaland in particular is thriving off of that. And I think one of the interesting things about Brad Haaland is that you can see, if you really watch him play, you can tell he's not a guy who's been huge his entire life. I mean, when he was younger, he was actually quite scrawny. So when he was learning the game, he'd actually get battered a little bit because he was playing with slightly older kids and he himself hadn't developed physically yet. So he's quite good at like moving into space. He doesn't always use his physique to barge people out of the way. Like a lot of the stuff he does on the pitch, he could have done even if he wasn't so huge. And I think that's quite one of the reasons I'm so excited about him, because you do sometimes see young players who are just overdeveloped physically and just go, oh, get on with that. But there's a lot more to his game and stuff. And also the first player from my hometown club, at least, to make it in the big time since West Ham hero Ragnvald Suma.
Yeah, I had him on the back of my shirt as a kid.
Oh, very,
my dad,
really?
My dad would tell me stories of whatever that player name.
Oh,
you
I
just
thought
said.
You were serious there, because you're no, such a hipster. No, you might have.
Ragnvald
Suma was a very good player.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Didn't
no doubt.
Make.
West Ham only signed good players, notoriously.
Is there some deal for him to go to Leipzig? I mean, what's
supposedly? It's not confirmed because they don't confirm these things publicly, but it has been suggested that there is a clause in this contract that he can go to Leipzig for something like 30 million euros. And I think that would be such an eminently sensible move. I mean, there's a massive hype now, and that he might have options from, in inverted commas, bigger and more glamorous clubs. But as much as people are slightly sniffy about RB Leipzig because of their association with the fizzy drink empire, they are a club, if he goes there, he'll be moving to a club that's sort of fighting near the top end of the Bundesliga, who under Julian Nagelsmann have real ambitions of sort of involving themselves in the title race in Germany on a consistent basis. So in terms of sporting challenge, it's a big step up. Yeah. But also the pressure won't be as massive as if he goes to, if Man United pay 80 million for him or something like that. I mean, that's putting him on an extraordinary level pressure wise and the need to deliver immediately. So actually taking this sort of stopover in Leipzig would be very sensible, I think.
Group C, City 1, Shakhtar 1. City only needed a point, that's what they got. Great moment in this game when Edison completely missed the ball and Fernandinho had to save him as Tete took too long to finish. I mean, it's lovely work from De Bruyne and Jesus for Gundogan's goal. The equaliser was a brilliant counter from Shakhtar, actually. But they're not quite clicking, John.
Yeah, I was watching this game, but Peter Drury, someone who I admire, actually, and also is the nicest man in the business.
Oh, is he?
He's a lovely man, yes. Classic Peter stuff. He said the Champions League anthem's playing and typical style. He says, you know, this fanfare is a regular part of the rhythm of their life. You know, talking about how Manchester City are in their 7th season in the Champions League, just so you can hear the boos of the Champions League anthem. And it was almost, you could see in a game like that, as Shakhtar Donetsk, who they've played about 58 times in the last 7 years, you can see why it was boring, why it wasn't. It never really took light. Pep Guardiola very understated after the game, less of the philosophising that we had at the weekend. But you know, actually, the goal that Shakhtar scored, the weird thing about that was it was a counter attack, but quite a slow counter attack.
Especially the cross was really sort of, it took an hour, didn't
it? And it was like loads of City defenders back, and Selemon scored, and it's. It was a bit like the Kante goal last weekend. and there's booze at full time. Rodri, I mean, he was coming back into the team. He's not as good as Fernandinho at protecting the defence, but unfortunately Fernandinho has to play in defence. There's a few problems for City, and yeah, it was flat. They got the job done, but both Gundogan and Pep Guardiola pretty much showed the sort of ennui that City felt about that match.
What City need is some more money, isn't it?
Yes.
And they've broken a record becoming the world's most valuable sports team. They've announced a £389 million investment from a company called Silver Lake for around 10% of the City Football Group's worldwide business, which values the group at £3.73 billion. So that, John, should level the playing field.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, this, because the football finance expert from University of Liverpool, Kieran Maguire, he actually recently valued Manchester City, or the City Football Group, as more valuable than Manchester United. Got a lot of stick for this, but he was still a billion out of the value that this deal places the value of City at. He points out that actually the City Football Group is losing something like £1 billion a week. They're not Manchester City, who are profitable. Some interesting strands to this. One of the things is that this Silver Lake company is a big tech company, or that's a lot of their investments are in that. I'm not sure how that works out, but one of the things is that they're going to move into India, a club in Mumbai. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is that there is another company that they're involved with, they've invested in. I think they're called Oak View.
Mm-hmm. And they're a retirement home in Surrey.
Sounds lovely, yeah.
There is a story out there that they are trying to build an arena in Manchester, around the Eastlands on the Etihad campus. Now, there is a Manchester Arena, as we know, which is causing a little bit of controversy. Now, I did a reading to Oak View, and their Irving Azoff, who is one of their main guys, is the manager of the Eagles.
Okay.
And of REO Speedwagon. So, you know, all roads lead to 70s rock, really, don't they?
That's tremendous.
Maybe what Eagles are what Man City need.
What does this actually mean? Does this mean they can go and buy loads more players? How does that...
Birds more so than the band.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Lars. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
Lars, you can have a minute now. There's no sin bins in the pod, sadly.
There is an idea out there that because there is this Manchester City, this threat of a ban from the Champions League, it's suspected that they're fairly confident they're not going to get the ban, which is why this investment is so valuable, which suggests that they're probably not going to have their wings clipped in that regard. But I suppose the thing you would say, I mean, we've mentioned that the Red Bull empire, but actually probably the biggest empire in football, this multiple club operations, is that City Football Group. And who can stop them? Who can stop their rise, really?
Anyway, we'll see what happens. Second place still very much up for grabs in this group after Atalanta's 2-0 win over Dinamo Zagreb. Shakhtar have 6 points, Zagreb 5, Atalanta 4. Spicy there, isn't it? Slightly spicy in that group.
Real chance of Atalanta going through with 7 points here. It could happen.
That would be the hipster's choice, right?
Yes, well, it would be remarkable getting out of a Champions
League. I'm a big Atlanta fan, funnily enough.
Of course you are.
Everyone is. And if you missed the highlights for this, do yourself a favour and find the second goal, Papu Gomez. Incredible stuff. Megan, great finish.
Thank you, Lars. Group A, Real Madrid 2, PSG 2. PSG coming back from 2-0 down with 10 minutes left. Real's first was beautiful move. Great work from Eden Hazard. Lovely ball from Carvajal. Benzema finishing. A rebound. Keylor Navas made a couple of decent saves for PSG. There was a brilliant bit of VAR in this game. Icardi nips in front of Courtois. The ref gives a free kick outside the box, sends Courtois off. You can see the foul is inside the box. We're waiting for the penalty. And then the ref brings it back for some foul by Idrissa Gueye just in the build, you know, like 10 weeks ago.
Yeah. It was a shove, though. Like, it was one of those where I was watching it and I was just being like, what is going on? And I was like, fair enough.
It was.
I don't, as I understand it, it's not... I might be wrong, referees out there contradict me, but I don't think they're actually meant to sort of go back and take like niggly fouls that far early in the build-up. I don't think that's what they're actually told to do, so I think that'd go down as a goof.
Gareth Bale came on to applause, a smattering of applause for Eden Hazard. Benzema scored again to make it 2-0. PSG got one literally from the kickoff. Terrible mistake from Varane, and Mbappe followed up. 2 minutes later, Palace Arabia spanked in an equaliser.
Great finish, that, yeah.
Brilliant finish, wasn't it? Bale smacked the post in the last minute with a free kick.
Gareth Bale needs to score very quickly so that he can do a golf celebration while it's still relevant. Because if it's in a couple of weeks, it won't be quite as good banter.
He'll do the Bellamy Golf Club, surely.
But it'll be too late if it's in a couple of weeks. It'll still be good. But you want it like when the flag fury is still raging.
Does he need to like re-up the fury a little bit by just mentioning it again? Just keep that really ticking over. Yeah, yeah. Before every game.
If you were Gareth Bale, would you go for a drive or would you sort of measure up a 10-foot putt?
Because that would be a drive, surely. Measuring up a putt as a goal celebration is a bit naff.
No, but I think measuring up a putt is really good. You know, it's to look at it from both sides.
You know,
when you sort of get on your haunches holding your putter and then you just... I mean, that would be perfect.
Certainly, if it's an important goal, you would hope that he would be swamped by teammates before he had time to do that.
No, they're not allowed. You know, they're not allowed to walk over his line, are they? Clearly,
that's true.
PSG win the group. Real second, up for grabs. Who goes into the Europa between Galatasaray and Bruges? They drew 1-1. Bruges equalising in the last minute. Two men were sent off for second yellow cards in the celebration. The goal scorer who took his top off, and one of his teammates for kicking and snapping the corner flag.
Yeah.
Absolute scenes.
Krepin Diaz, the goal scorer, who used to play Norway, of course, so good lad. But also, like, Clinton Mata getting sent off. A weird sort of politics and football mashup in the name there. Clinton Mata. Don't see that very often.
In Group D, Juve beat Atleti 1-0. Paulo Dybala with a beautiful free kick from basically on the touchline. Yeah. I mean, he definitely meant it. And he scored some crackers in this competition, Sam. And it begs the question, why did they even think about selling him in the summer?
Money? I can't think of any other reason why, unless Lars is about
Maurizio Sarri spoke about this earlier in the season before the window was closing or slightly after, is that their squad is too big. They have too many players. They've had to let Emre Can, is not registered for the Champions League. Like they have too many players.
Yeah.
And so they had to move some on, and then you had to look at the ones you can actually feasibly get some money for. They have the Ronaldo salary they have to pay. Like Higuain is still there. They really want to get rid of him. And Sarri actually said straight up that if you don't take these things into account, then some of our actions in the market might look bizarre or absurd or something was the word he used.
Probably the same reason they sold Moise Kean. Right?
Yeah, I think it's very likely that if their squad was in a less weird place, they would have kept on to him.
Have they got a buyback on Moise Kean? Because I know his dad's not very happy.
Honestly, not sure.
I don't think anyone's happy about that deal at the moment, are they?
Not really, no. Apparently Moise Kean's dad said that he was promised some sort of like payment specifically from Juventus, where he was just like, they owe me money, he needs to go back there now. And everyone was be like, okay.
Is his dad Roy?
Might be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Roy or Steve?
Do you think it's one of the two?
Or Robbie.
Who would you rather be your... Which Keane would you like to be your dad, Lars?
Robbie seems like a laugh.
Yeah.
Seems like a good fella.
I'd prefer Roy, actually.
Would you want to go for a pint with Roy, though?
I think Roy Keane would probably be better company than Robbie Keane, yeah.
Yeah,
I think Robbie might be a bit too matey as a dad, and I don't want that.
Better company, but as your dad, would you want Roy Keane as your dad?
Well, do you know his children are supposedly... He's got 5 children, and they're supposedly the best behaved children you've ever
they
met.
They love him. They're not scared of him.
Yeah.
It's just pure love. It's just respect.
It's respect.
Robbie Keane has a son called Robert Keane, who, when he was at LA Galaxy, was his mascot and, you know, was pretty much everywhere he went in a sort of little mini Ronaldo scenario.
Mm. Oh, that's... How old is he?
I'd say he's got to be 10 or so now.
Right, okay. It's not like 25.
No.
You know, okay. Rihanna was in the stadium. Effen Okoku spotted that on commentary. Some nice chat between Effen and the commentator about Rihanna.
The Norwegian commentators apparently did not. That Rihanna did not register. And I think all the more power to them for it.
Juve have topped the group. Atleti could still get caught by Bayer Leverkusen. They won 2-0 at Lokomotiv Moscow. I know I've mentioned this before, but I was idly watching this game and then... I heard the commentator say, there's Cholouka. I was like, he can't still be playing. So he's only 33.
Yeah.
Like, in my mind, he has been playing for 3 decades.
He needs to drop his, like, daily routine. I want to know exactly how he's managed to just keep this going. Because, like, what time... Is he one of those gets up at 5, has just bran flakes for 3 hours just to just keep him...
It feels like he was signed by like Jacques Santini at Tottenham or something like that. It's that.
I think it was Bill Nicholson
who
signed Gianluca. Yeah. Anyway, Group F, Barcelona 3, Borussia Dortmund 1. Messi's 700th game, and he set up 2 beautifully, scored 1. He's obviously brilliant.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. I agree.
It was another gala night for him, not least the fact that this stat that he's now scored against 34 different opponents. Now, Ronaldo would have been on 34, except Aaron Ramsey stole his goal against Lokomotiv a couple of weeks ago. Oh dear, Aaron.
Yeah. Although Ronaldo nicked one off someone for Portugal, didn't he, in the international
But process. That's not the Champions League. And, you know, when both of them retire, they want the Champions League record. I think Ronaldo probably is going to keep the all-time scorer. But stuff like that. Do you reckon they WhatsApp each other about
stuff? Oh, yeah. I reckon he's deleted him off of WhatsApp. I reckon he's had him kicked out of the group.
Yeah. Who else is in the group?
No, do you think... No, it's one way. Someone is getting blue ticks all the time and being ghosted by the other one.
Do you think he texts him straight after, like, oh, sorry, Chris, that was... I completely aired him.
Jadon Sancho got a beautiful consolation and hit the bar with another great strike. Slightly weird what's going on in Germany. He was subbed off in the first half of that 4-0 defeat to Bayern, Lars.
Yeah.
Suggesting he wasn't totally fit.
Well, the odd thing was that there was a suggestion before the game that he wasn't totally fit, and then he was very poor in the first half against Bayern, or very poor by his standards in the first half, and was taken off in the first half. But then Favre made a point after the game of saying that he wasn't injured and that he just hadn't played well, and that's what apparently has made him a little bit unhappy. And it seemed like, you know, look, it could have been... Favre is a very sort of scholarly guy, right? So maybe he will argue that it was a tactical move, like they went with sort of Hakimi and Schultz down the flanks because they wanted more running power and more defensive ability. But it seems like a sort of a power move to sort of bench him or try to trigger him a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it just, when Dortmund are completely anemic and bad and make all the same mistakes they've been making for a while under Favre, they look really passive in defence, just don't play well at all. When he then comes on and brings such a spark of life to the game, Favre just ends up looking a bit stupid and he's already on very, very thin ice there.
Well, then can he not just say, well, benching him and giving him a little bit of a kick up the arse is just sort of like he comes on, he's got with a little bit to prove, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
That's actually spin, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a power move, and as I understand it, Favre doesn't have long for Dortmund.
It doesn't seem that way, because it's just... It's not just that it's not working, but it keeps not working in the same ways.
Yeah.
And that's very worrying for a manager. He's a well-regarded manager, but it's not, yeah.
Sancho went through the mix zone without stopping last night, telling reporters he's not allowed to talk. So how long Sancho will be at Dortmund is another question.
But the backdrop here is that it's sort of... Everyone assumes they'll sell him next summer, sort of come what may.
Right.
And the idea of a player signing, going, a player of his magnitude and the kind of transfer and the kind of deal it would be being done in January seems very unlikely anyway. But it's more a case of getting the best out of him in the what is likely to be the last sort of half season of his Dortmund career.
And getting a lot of money for him in the summer, right? Inter won 3-1 at Slavia Prague. Lukaku was superb.
Yeah.
Set up the first with like amazing strength. Set up the third with a glorious outside of the foot cross as well, and the Slavia centre-back slips on the halfway line. Lukaku takes it past the keeper and then in absolutely brilliant playground how to play football, he's on the 6-yard box and he just absolutely larrups this ball in the back of the net. I mean, it was my favourite moment of game week 5, if that's what we're calling it. And he seems to me in a really happy place, John, doesn't he?
250 goals in his career now. Which, a player of that age, that I was actually looking, Romelu Lukaku hasn't won a medal in football since 2010, which was in the Belgian Pro League.
Wow.
So he was at Chelsea, but not really at Chelsea. And it varies couple of spells, you know, it was at West Brom and Everton.
Yep.
He was at United when they didn't win anything. Inter, I presume he joined with the intention of winning medals, which is very possible this season. But it seems weird that a player of that...
Who's been around for that long. 52 goals and 84 for Belgium at the age of 26.
I do remember someone making that point that's like United signed Lukaku, who's not won any trophies. It's like, where was he meant to win these trophies? At West Brom or Everton? Like, yeah. I don't know. It's good to see him play, and it's a bit of a cheap thing to sort of use Lukaku's current form as a stick to beat United with. But still, to have a guy who's clearly so very, very capable that United got so little out of comparatively compared to his ability, I think that is worrying for them.
It did seem that Solskjaer took one look at Lukaku and decided that he would have to be sold, cashed in. Yeah. I mean, it took a while to get there.
But it's something like the Belgian, very good Belgian journalist, Christophe Tellet,
of course,
has told the story about how when Lukaku got to Inter, the doctors checked him up and discovered he had a digestive issue that had been unresolved, and they had to put him on a very special diet, and he suddenly lost loads of weight and looked
nothing
a lot sharper.
A Yakult can't fix.
Well, but it's just mind-boggling to me that United is one of the wealthiest clubs in the world. Weren't able to figure this out. When he was there, oh, he looks a bit heavy, you know, his touch isn't good, he's not sharp. He goes to a new club and the doctors are immediately, oh, yeah, there's a digestive problem there, just needs a special diet. It's fine. Now he's really good. Why are United so inept?
Here is a great stat, although quite random. The first Inter player to score 10 goals in his first 13 Serie A games since the 1940s. So that's the stat you want, isn't it? If you forget medals.
It's the big one.
It is. We should also mention a very VAR-y equaliser for Slavia Prague. They claimed for the penalty. Inter broke. Lukaku scored.
Yeah.
And then it's brought back for a penalty, 1-1. But, I mean, that's how football is these days. Nothing we can do about it. Barca through then between Inter and Dortmund for the second spot. Group G, RB Leipzig are through. Second spot still up for grabs after Zenit beat Lyon 2-0. Leipzig needing a point to qualify were 2-0 down in the last minute at home to Benfica. They scored a penalty and then equalised in the fifth minute of injury time. I mean, that's how to do it, isn't it? That's lovely stuff.
They should have had another penalty as well. There was a moment where I think it was Nkunku just was shoved to the ground and VAR was just like, nah, that's fine. And you're like, I genuinely don't know what football is anymore. I don't understand what is a foul and what isn't a foul. And I understand that that's what everyone's saying, but I don't think I've seen a more blatant penalty in a long time. It just pushed him over by the head.
Oh, there was a good one at Anfield, the sort of throat grab on Salah. It was a very obvious penalty that was just there. So
I think he fouled him three times in that one move, fouled Salah three times, just kept grabbing him.
That moment was
angles.
A really good example for why players go down easily and exaggerate, because like Salah stayed on his feet, didn't get a penalty. And you never do if you stay on your feet. Yeah. It's just the way it is.
Ethan Ambidu got his first start for Leipzig, so good for him.
Do you think he feels like he's missing out on the Chelsea party?
Do you think if he was there, I mean,
do you think he'd get... I mean, he's a good player.
He is a good player.
Will you play it ahead of Jorginho?
Yeah.
No, not necessarily, but they're playing a lot of games and he might get to play.
He'd be in and around.
In and around.
He'd be in
but
and around.
Maybe he's had enough of being in and around.
True.
Yeah. It's more of an issue for me that he's gone to a club where he's also always going to struggle to get in the first team. Mm-hmm. This is very odd. I mean, it's not a bad thing for a young player to train under Nagelsmann for a season. You know, you can do worse, but presumably when you send someone out on loan, you want them to get a lot of first team football.
Right, in the Europa League, Celtic and Manchester United are already through. Arsenal and Wolves need just a single point from their games, and Rangers could qualify if they get a result and the other game in their group goes their way. We'll round up all those games on Monday, and that'll do for part two. Part three will begin with the Football League. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. In the Football League, biggest win of the season for Championship leaders West Brom, 4-1 over Bristol City. Leeds were top for a night after a very late 1-0 win over Reading on Tuesday. Fulham are third after beating Derby 3-0, and Forest are fourth after beating QPR 4-0. Sadly, the team in fifth didn't win 5-0, etc., etc. Would have been great all the way down to the bottom of the league. Preston, who are fifth, actually lost 4-0 to Hull. A grudge match of the week was Sheffield Wednesday Birmingham. Finished 1-1. Gary Monk, clearly not a big fan of Pep Clotet. They worked together. Clotet was his assistant at three clubs until Monk got sacked by Birmingham and Clotet got the job. Gary Monk saying, "You live and learn. Unfortunately, I didn't listen to a lot of people in football circles who warned me about him. That's an error of judgment from myself. I don't speak with him. What's important to me when I'm assembling a staff is to give them an opportunity and show them complete trust, and they repay that trust. Sadly, not everyone has that character. Some choose to pursue their own opportunities in the worst possible way." Is it that we all just love gossip so much, or that press conferences are generally so tedious that when something like this happens, we're all just like, wow, someone's actually said something interesting?
A bit of both, isn't it? I mean, I understand it's a lot of journalists' job to pay lip service to a lot of these press conferences, but I think I've heard maybe 5 interesting ones ever, possibly ever. So Gary Monk just like fully going like full Succession, like real drama to it. I'm like, I'm banging into that.
I feel like you buried the lead though, Max. He does say all this error of judgment, don't speak with him, blah, blah, blah. Not everyone has that character. Some possible pursuit, some possible worst possible way. And then he added, I don't want to waste energy talking about it. Well, well done. Well done, Gary. He's been
the bigger man.
You've successfully not wasted energy.
As Ollie Kay pointed out, that the company Six Pointer are the PR firm that represents both Gary Monk and Pep Clutter. So their Christmas drinks could be quite amusing.
Well, that's great. Do you reckon they're in the same...
They might be on a WhatsApp group, yeah.
Yeah, possibly. When Jose was doing his first press conference, I had Sky Sports News on, and they were going, coming up, Jose's press conference. And they didn't broadcast it for like an hour and a half.
No, they didn't. They're not allowed to show it live. It's right. Part of Tottenham's rules and regulations, which I think both of us tweeted about that at the time. I couldn't believe it. And, I have friends there, like, it's going on now. Mm.
But then what happened was, it was swooshing to every other press conference, and I was just watching this, you know, one after the other of just... utter tedium.
Yeah, Graham Potter talking while... And funny enough, I don't know if you noticed that on Sky Sports News, behind them on the TV, you could actually see the Jose press conference taking place on the TV behind them.
Gary Monk, after the game, said, look, it is what it is. I appreciate not everyone's going to like it. Staying true to myself is the most important thing. I understand the reaction, but I got asked the question, and like I've always done, I have to be true to myself. I can take honest criticism. I was talking facts. Goes a bit Rafa here. I wish it wasn't facts. I wish it wasn't true. I wish with every part of my body, but I didn't do it to gain anything. I can't change who I am. Like with every other question I get asked, I was just trying to be open and honest. Cloutet has not really said anything.
Gary Monk is one of the most intense people I've come across in football. I think it's in Michael Calvin's book where he describes that he wears one of those headsets, like a Bluetooth headset, and records his own training sessions and then listens back to his own training sessions to see if he did well, or this is what he did when he was at Swansea. Someone that drives himself very hard, but not always successfully, but sometimes successfully.
In League One, Portsmouth moved into 10th with a 3-2 win over Rotherham. They only 10th, Portsmouth, blimey. Sunderland lost again, going down 2-1 at home to Burton. Phil Parkinson with just two wins in his 11 games in charge. Ipswich Wickham ended in a goalless draw at the top of the table, as did the two games in League Two in midweek. Forest Green and Crewe both missing their chance to go top. It was a fun Tuesday of League Two, not a goal in it. Premier League, the early kickoff, City go to Newcastle, Burnley play Palace, Chelsea play West Ham. James says, how do you think the news that David Moyes could replace either Pellegrini or Silva is making West Ham or Everton fans feel? This is the West Ham section, Sam. Moyes back to West Ham.
It doesn't fill me with confidence. But then not a lot about West Ham does. At this point, I pretty much just go, yeah, just do what you want. I'm almost just done. I'll just turn up. I'll just like a zombie now. I'll just be like, well, yeah, we're going to lose 2-0 to our next three games. We've got Wolves after that as well. Maybe they've been shaken up by the Nuno gossip. But even still, I mean, bring him on. You know what? Actually, yeah, bring on David Moyes, please.
At West Ham... I mean, at Everton, he did a good job. That's agreed, though. Speak to Everton fans and they will talk about years of relative austerity where they never quite got over the leap into the big league, which were understandable reasons. At West Ham, he did that temporary job. They didn't renew his contract. I remember I went to the press conference where he announced himself, and the line that always stands out to me was like, I just want to get loads of crosses into the box.
and you know what? To be fair, now we've got a striker where that would probably help. With Haller, Haller's probably just been like, I mean, does David Moyes come onto Haller's radar? Possibly not. But, I mean, it wouldn't hurt, really, at this point. Just something needs to give.
Are you worried about going down?
You should be.
Yeah. Well, no, I am now. I mean, now that you've said that. No, it's just so bad. I mean, I don't think we've had this good a squad in a long time. And the fact that even that hasn't helped us is just sort of endemic of something bad happening.
Sebastian Haller in danger of falling foul of the curse of the West Ham striker.
It's happened a bit already. Like, he scored three goals quite early on from a combined 10 yards. One of them being an overhead kick on the line. And I was like, he's going to be good. But it's just not happened since then.
It looked very good early on, and he has been a very good player before. It's just,
but I mean, if you're a striker,
just don't go to West Ham.
Well, you need the ball in the box. You know, maybe you do. Yeah. I mean, the trouble is just it. David Moyes is just such a depressing thing to hear, and that might be totally unfair, right? That might be completely unfair.
But he's, yeah, he's like, who would I compare him to? It's sort of like almost like a John Major, Alistair Darling figure,
but even
competent, but not much else to him.
Even Big Sam is sort of more it's more exciting, right?
Yeah, it's a bit more pizzazz about Sam.
Yeah, I think Everton fans might disagree on
that. True, but if there's more pizzazz about Sam, then
it's just there's just like such a small pool of people that would go to West Ham at this point, because you'd be like, oh, what, can we have Rafa or someone like that?
I don't think that's true though. You're a club in the Premier League that has a lot of money. If you watch globally, there are a lot of managers who want to go.
That's true, but also I think that the way that West Ham fans anyway are notoriously pessimistic, and I think there's a bit of a bad taste around the club, especially now. Although the stadium has become less of an issue, we've still got the quite pressing issue of having two people in charge of the club who are just seem bad to work with, to be honest.
Liverpool played Brighton at 3, Spurs Bournemouth at 3. Another nice fixture for Jose, really, to get back into the groove. Management gets trickier next week. They go to Old Trafford. The late kickoff on Saturday, Southampton Watford. On Sunday, Norwich play Arsenal at 2. Wolves play Sheffield United at 2. There are rumours that Nuno Espirito Santo is being looked at, he's been identified, I read, by the Arsenal owners, as if they didn't identify him before.
Seems like it would be a good get for them. He seems like a very capable guy. His sort of counter-attacking style might work well with them, with the Lacazette and Aubameyang thing. I don't know if they're going to pull the trigger on Emery. Yeah, they can do a lot worse.
Leicester play Everton at 4:30, and Manchester United Villa at 4:30. Ollie says, given the return of Kike Sanchez Flores and Mourinho, as well as Moyes being linked to two of his old clubs, what other throwback managers does the pod want to see back in the Premier League? I'd love Pards back at West Ham. I am a Spurs fan, he says.
Yeah.
Maybe Jerry Francis, Joe Kinnear, Alan Kirbishley.
Want Martin Yol.
We
need more Martin Yol in our lives.
Yeah. Jacques Santini, Alain Perram, Renny Mullenstein.
Ian Bramford,
yeah. I'm going back to Dave Merrington.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Deep cuts then.
Yeah.
Looking ahead to next week, the first round of midweek fixtures in the Premier League this season. For UK viewers, the first round of fixtures, which will be broadcast by Amazon, they're showing all the fixtures on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday to anyone with an Amazon Prime subscription. A pro tip, if you've not subscribed before, you can take a 30-day free trial, use it for both next week and the Boxing Day fixtures, also brought to you by Amazon, and then cancel it before they charge.
And use it for your Christmas deliveries.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Can I just be an old man shouting at a cloud here? Like,
yes.
At any point, if you have to have more than two subscriptions to watch football from one specific league, it's all gone completely wrong. And people should be ashamed of themselves and have a rethink.
It's a model popular, or made popular in America, I suppose.
I saw a lot of things.
Yes. I can't comment until we see what the production's like. But, I mean, I've seen some of the stuff they did for US Open Tennis, which was perfectly serviceable. It's usable.
How do I plug it into my telly? Or do I have to watch it on my computer?
If you've got a smart TV, or
if you've got a PlayStation, they might have it on there.
I don't have a PlayStation.
What's one of those Amazon
Six
Fire Stick?
Yeah.
I'm never going to watch these.
No, you're not.
Just go to the pub. They won't be on in the pub.
I think it's quite interesting, though. It does break down
they don't have a Fire Stick.
I think it breaks down the monopoly of Sky Sports, because like the BT stuff has actually been reasonably interesting. Like, they're couple of the documentaries that they were making, where they have the access now on the Champions League games, and then especially the Barcelona Liverpool one that they released at the end of last season, was great. That's as good football programming as I've seen in a long, long time. I think that mixing it up a bit, although it's a pain in the ass for regular fans, I'm quite lucky that I've managed to just sort of like go and take a punt, and I've got Amazon Prime anyway, so it's just fallen into my lap. But
they have made those documentaries as well. You know, the Spurs one should be good.
It should be. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think BT's coverage has been good. Their social media coverage has been better than Sky.
By a long way, yeah.
Yeah.
But I do sort of agree with you, Lars. You can't.
Where does it end, Max?
You can't have monopolies, but you would just rather it was all on one channel.
Would that deal in particular, the one where you buy a game week, as they call it in Fantasy League, was something where the Premier League thought that they could sweat the asset more and ended up having to, I think they had to go back to the market to get that deal actually sold. BT have got a week of that as well, haven't they? if they've got a full week coming up.
Is that
up.
In the international? In that the winter break type one, is it?
I think they've got a full week of fixtures as well. It was an attempt by the Premier League to try and make more money, but as it turned out, from the domestic market, they made almost exactly the same.
Right, Zlatan has purchased 22.5% of Hammarby, a Stockholm-based team, in the Allsvenskan. One of the three teams who were in the mix for the title on the last day of the season a couple of weeks ago. He grew up in Malmo and started his career there. Fans there are not happy. He had a bronze statue unveiled outside Malmo Stadium just a month ago. It's been covered in graffiti. The head of the statue has been covered by a plastic bag, and it's got a toilet seat on its arm.
And and last night there seems to have been an attempt at setting the statue on fire, undermined by the fact that it's made out of metal. But okay, so there are two sides to this. One of them is that if Zlatan wants to get involved with football in Sweden on the ownership side, Hammarby is an exciting place to start because they are a very big club. They're a club with a huge support. It's been alleged, it's been claimed that they have the biggest fan base in the Nordic countries. It's a hard thing to measure, of course, but you get the gist. Very much a club of the people. Never quite been as successful as that popularity should suggest.
Are they a sort of Schalke of the...
That's not a bad shout. I like that. Except they're also based in the capital, so the potential for further growth is very large.
So they're like a West Ham.
Well, that's a very harsh. Yeah. The point is, it's not a bad... If you want to invest somewhere, you're going to bring... He's going to have a couple of seats on the board, I understand now. If you want to bring some football expertise and maybe some network you can help with and your know-how and your experience. So this is a low-key, exciting thing for Zlatan to do. But talk about... He is from Malmö, right? And he's always been very closely identified with the place, maybe more so than the club itself. But I think it is, for them, it will feel like a significant betrayal that he's invested into one of the team's rivals. And people will be quite angry about that.
The mythologizing around it, I know there was a little that we were saying before about the book that he had quote-unquote written and all that. I just can't believe anything that he does now. So, like, it really genuinely would not surprise me if this is almost another PR stunt a little bit. Because otherwise, if he'd have just invested in Malmo, say, literally no one would be talking about that at all.
Okay, so the background here, though, is that Hammarby have, for a fairly long time, been owned, part-owned, sort of 4 or 5% by the same ownership group that owns LA Galaxy. So the suggestion is...
Yeah. That he's just the face of that.
Well, no, he has definitely gotten half of that stake, but it's been alleged and speculated in that perhaps this is some sort of almost like a bonus arrangement for his work with LA Galaxy. Right. You might remember that his first period there, he was on quite a low basic wage. Mm. But the point is, that's the connection there between the ownership at LA Galaxy. So it's not like he's randomly gotten involved with a random Swedish club.
Yeah.
That's where it comes through.
Things have really changed, haven't they, for players post-football?
It's not opening a pub, is it? Yeah.
No, I mean, I suppose George Best would be the first of his kind, but eventually he ended up as like a newspaper columnist and all the rest of it, and, well, going to the pub. But, you know, I mean, you've got the Neville Class of 92 thing, you've got Beckham, you've got this type of thing. Like, you know, it feels like the next status symbol for an ex-star player is to have their own club.
Yeah, the game's changed, hasn't it? Ryan says, do you think John Terry was upset with Jamie Carragher? So Jamie Carragher's team of the decade had company in Van Dijk, as did Gary Neville's, actually. John Terry, below that on Instagram, did three confused emoji and then went 09-10 trophy, 14-15 trophy, played every minute of every game, only the fifth player ever to do that, 16-17 trophy. I mean... John and I, before the pod, were saying we've got a month left before we do our team of the decade. Mm. It's happening quite quickly.
A lot could happen between now and then. John Terry's been a little greedy there because I don't think anyone doubts that in the team of the 2000s or the aughts, as the Americans call it, he would be in that team alongside Rio Ferdinand. In fact, during that rant, he actually says, can you call it a rant? He says that him and Rio should have been the two of this decade.
Of both decades?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Now, that's quite some claim. Mm. And as John Terry, completely, brilliant in that era, had a bit of a wobble maybe for Chelsea. In that 2014-15 season, it was a bit of a swan song. 2016-17, didn't really play that much. Okay, but...
Trophy facts.
It's hard to argue with emoji.
I was thinking, like, which players would go over two decades in a league And the only one I could really think of now would be Messi. Mm-hmm. Over 2 decades.
Possibly, yeah.
Here's a question from Dale. 22 years ago tomorrow, Australia went out of the World Cup, qualifying on away goals to Iran. It still burns inside.
I was in Australia when this happened. Right. My memory of it, in fact, is that a sort of professional pest, and he was a hippie guy with like big hair and beard and all the rest of it, ran on the field and stopped the game for 5 minutes or so. At this point, Australia were cruising through, and after that, they completely lost it and then went out of the...
Was Venables the manager?
Yes. And this same guy, a few weeks later, did the same at the Melbourne Cup race. So this was this sort of professional pest guy.
Dale's question is, what is the most painful lingering football memory for you? Around 1991, 92, around Christmas, Cambridge were top of the old second division. And had we won that league or got promoted...
John Beck,
yes. We'd have got into the Premier League for the first time. And I find if I see that league table, it makes me sad because we were close to the Premier League. And just have 1 year there and that, you know, would have been just a thing, right?
Mm. Mine is... It's not a club that I have any affinity to, but I think one of the most affecting scenes I've ever seen was when Hearts were going for the league title in Scotland... 85-86 went on a great run, and then on the final day of the season, lost, and Celtic won the title. They won 6-0, and the scenes of Hearts fans on the terrace, I've never seen a scene of such desolation in my life. And I remember seeing it on the TV and being out and it not being able to get it out of my mind. I was 10 years old and just thinking, the tragedy, obviously more tragic things I've seen, but that's the one that sticks with me.
Lars?
It's going to have to be Norway at Euro 2000, just because I've completely blocked it out. I mean, I was talking about like the Norwegian national team on the radio, I think, the other week. And I actually said that I was defending us, saying like, we were last in the tournament in the World Cup 1998. And someone on Twitter actually had to remind me, you know, guys, you were actually at Euro 2000. I just realised that was such a disappointing group stage. Iversen's goal against Spain, of course, was good times, but the last game, the group stage in particular, I've just completely suppressed. I don't want to talk about it.
Sam?
It's dreadful.
West Ham, Liverpool, FA Cup final. I genuinely don't really remember anything what happened after Gerrard's goal. All I remember is that Lionel Scaloni kept in a ball that he should have just let go out for a throw and then gave the ball straight to Gerrard and he scored.
Sam, thanks for your time.
No worries, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Lars.
I guess.
Thanks, John.
Cheers.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.